sexual education.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Sponsored by the TBI, Survivors Network at TBISS.com.
All survivors, all the time. For automatic updates and everything brain injury.
Join now at TBISN.com.
The only all survivor and family network in the world.
Listen every night at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern.
And to us now at 7 Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Almost.
What do I do when my love is away? Is it worrying to be alone? How do I feel by here? Would you believe in love at first sight? Yeah, I'm certain that it happens all the time.
Time for another edition of Brain Injury Radio programming featuring Recovery Now, sponsored by Ash Publishing.
With your host of Spectacular, the one, the only,
Kim Justice, Kim Justice,
Justice, Kim Justice, Kim Justice, Kim.
Well, hi there, everybody. Looks like Craig's been experimenting with new intros again for the show. As you said, this is Kim Justice with Recovery Now on Brain Injury Radio. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, pretty soon to be 5 hours a night. All of the live shows are available immediately afterward in the archive on demand section. So if you come in late or you're in an area where you don't have peer support, you can come to braininjuryradio.com and look at the on-demand section and find, geez, we have almost 30 hosts now. So there's a little something for the flavor of everybody out there. Let's see. What else did I want to tell you tonight before I introduce our guest? I'm excited to have our guest tonight. We're going to get a lot of good information from him. A lot of you know that I went 17 years after my brain injury without any support or, no pun intended, heads up from the traditional medical community about resources that might be available to me, because I looked normal and I could walk and talk, and well, they cut me loose and just didn't give me a clue of some of the things like the full basket syndrome, the sensory overload, short-term memory problems, emotion regulation issues, and a whole lot of other things that since I've become a host in the last year and a half, I've learned a lot about. I've said more than once, I've learned more in the last year and a half as a host on Brain Injury Radio than I learned the 17 years before. So tonight, I'm happy to get to hear. Normally, I'm getting guests from all over the country. I didn't know what Nebraska might be up to, but I did hook up with the Brain Injury Association, Peggy Reicher, and she came on one night. And now I found out that we have disability rights in Nebraska. Tonight, we're going to talk about what disability rights in Nebraska does to give you an idea about what you might have available in your state or what you might be looking for. And we're going to be talking some with our guest about bullying tonight and cyberbullying. And then we'll probably continue that. I see one of the people, Belinda, who I had the pleasure of meeting the other night in the chat room, and we're going to talk a little further about a different kind of bullying, cyber harassment and cyber stalking. And hopefully Brian will be able to give us a little direction about that. I was surprised at how huge that this phenomena is, how much it's growing all the time, and how many government agencies are involved, depending on what category it falls into. So we'll wade through all of that a little bit later. I would like to take just one moment before I introduce my guest. About an hour ago, I got some really shocking news. A cousin by marriage, well, first of all, my first cousin is a police officer, and a cousin by marriage is also a police officer on that side. And my guest might have even heard about this today, although the hospitals are keeping under wraps why, but I'll tell you why. His whole family got the flu. There's Greg and Vanessa and their two children, and Greg got the flu a couple of weeks ago, and then his wife got it, and then their two little children got it. And Greg's didn't seem to get better. In fact, it got worse, and he was hospitalized for it. When he first got there, they found that he had a case of the basic type A flu, and then discovered that he also had H1N1. He's been in the hospital for about a week, and all of his systems started shutting down. 43 years old, and I found out an hour ago that he died. Wow, it just seems unbelievable in this day and age. You hear about people who die of the flu and pneumonia, but normally you think of those as being people that are older or their immune systems are compromised. This is a 43-year-old police officer in peak shape, prime shape, and a lot of the Omaha police force that hasn't been working has been up in the waiting room at the hospital. Just everybody, all of us, assuming he was going to get better from this. As a matter of fact, yesterday his wife posted that he did seem to be a little bit better, and yet a few hours ago he died. So if you all have an extra prayer out there to send up to Vanessa and Greg's two kids for this terribly tragic, unbelievable, unexpected event, I hope you'll send them up. That's really about all a person can do at this point is say a prayer. So I am so sorry to the Hamels for their loss and my cousin. In any case, my guest tonight is Brian Craig, and he's a staff attorney at Disability Rights Nebraska in Lincoln, Nebraska, where he provides advocacy for students in special education matters, represents clients in litigation, and performs monitoring activities at private and state-run facilities throughout the state. He's a graduate of the University of Nebraska College of Law and is a member of the Nebraska State Bar Association and the American Bar Association. Disability Rights Nebraska was created to assist individuals with disabilities and their families in protecting and advocating for their rights. Since its creation in 1977, Disability Rights Nebraska has promoted the principles of equality, self-determination, and dignity of persons with disabilities. Disability Rights Nebraska operates 7 federally funded protection and advocacy programs and has been designated as Nebraska's protection and advocacy system. The PNA system, a nationwide network of federally mandated, state-created disability rights organizations. PNA organizations within the system each have the authority to provide legal representation and other advocacy services to people with disabilities and together comprise the nation's largest provider of legal advocacy services for people with disabilities. At this time, I would like to bring on my guest, Brian Craig. Are you with us, Brian?
I am. Thanks, Kim. Glad to be here. And I'm sorry to hear about your cousin. I hadn't heard about that on the news.
Well, the reason they're not telling, I think, is because the flu is so incredibly contagious. And, you know, everybody's walking around and, well, probably everywhere, but, you know, we're in Nebraska where the weather changes every 2 minutes. Everybody's walking around with a cough and a runny nose and the flu, and you don't really think anything of it. And like I said, he got it first, and then his wife got it. The two little kids got it. They got better. He got worse. His wife is a nurse. They went to the hospital, and he's kind of been touch and go. They wound up putting him on a ventilator. He was having trouble breathing. He had dialysis yesterday. All of his vitals were going up. It appeared that he was going to rally, and then he just died a couple hours ago. It's just so, I think I'm still kind of in shock about it. Thank you. You don't think of somebody so young and vital dying of the flu. It's just such a shocking thing.
It is, and hopefully it's just an isolated incident.
I hope it's an isolated incident, but I think that's one of the reasons why they're not talking a lot about it on the news. They said, how did they describe that? Well, a serious illness is what they called it, but they didn't come out and say it was the flu, that he, you know, died of a combination of the basic flu and the H1N1 because it is so contagious. They had him in an area of the hospital. At first it was an open area, you know, and then they wound up putting him in a very isolated area, so isolated, in fact, that the people that came to visit him had to put on, you know, like spacesuit things and bring a change of clothes so that after they were done visiting in the isolation unit, they would take off the spacesuit thing and the clothes they had on underneath and change their clothes. That's how contagious this is. Obviously, like I said, they're not talking about that on the news, and I'm not sure how or if they'll be reporting this case. I heard it on Facebook from my cousin. So in any case, freakish, very freakish thing. Just it makes you really, I mean, here at Brain Injury Radio, we know that at any minute something can happen to change your life forever. You know, as my book says, in a flash, you know, you can be here now and get up and walk across your living room in an hour, and it can be good night, Irene, and that's a scary thing to come to grips with. But this is a, you know, a different kind of circumstance. Who dies from the flu, you know, that is in peak age and prime of their life, in great shape? Just I don't know, kind of blows me away. I didn't mean to bring that up for the show here, but I just heard about this, and I just can't believe it. But in any case, Brian, I really want to thank you for coming on tonight. I wasn't aware that your agency existed until I did a little bit of checking around. And one of the things that disappoints me a little bit, and I've heard an awful lot of people, this program goes all over the world, 36 countries all over the United States. And you know, I've heard so many times about the traditional medical model and the way they handle things. You know, we get treated, and in a case like mine, a ruptured brain aneurysm, they saved my life, and I don't minimize that, what the neurosurgeon did, but there was going to be some things that were going to stay with me for a while, some that were going to stay with me forever. And part of that was just from the ruptured brain aneurysm, but it was also a subacnoid hemorrhage, which is a kind of a type of stroke when the aneurysm bleeds, and it was misdiagnosed for 24 hours by an internist. And so, you know, my brain was bleeding into its cavities for 24 hours before I was diagnosed. And then went into a coma, had a craniotomy that nobody told me until I wrote my book at the end of 2011 that came out at the beginning of 2012. And that was when I first saw a copy of my records, which they said had been, they didn't scan them back in 1995, and the protocol back then was that after 10 years, they would get rid of your medical records. I couldn't believe that. And it was by grace. I had called and told a lady at the hospital medical record department why I wanted my medical record. She told me their rule and that they would have long since been destroyed. And I talked to her quite a while, long enough to tell her what I wanted and the fact that I had metal in my head and I couldn't believe they could destroy something that was that huge. And then magically, I mean, she let me go, but I gave her my phone number, and it was just one of the miracles that I write about. 2 weeks later, the same woman called me, and she said she didn't understand how or why it was even possible, but she found an envelope with my medical records in it. So I read my medical records for the first time, and it said that during the course of surgery, they thought they got it clipped, and kind of like a balloon, I guess, you know, they got it clipped, and it kind of jumped out of the clip and started spraying blood all over into my brain. And so, you know, my brain really went through a lot. To me now, as a host after a year and a half, to think that you come out of that unscathed is a silly thought. But after it happened and the doctors told me so, I believed I was fixed. I thought I was broken and I got fixed and I was going to go back to the person that I was before. And so, you know, when I was going in and complaining to doctors about things in the first year, they were saying, well, you had brain surgery. It takes time for these things to heal. And the answer kept being time, 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 time. And then after a year, when I was going in, they were saying, well, then they started the pelting with pills routine, and it would be whatever the drug du jour was. And what I see now in retrospect, and I've heard from so many people on these boards, on these lines, is that they take what was originally an organic issue and make it into a mental health issue. And I say tongue-in-cheek, laughing but not so funny, that, yeah, by the time you've not been validated that many times and you make it to the shrink boneyard, you are half-baked. But that isn't how it started. You know, that was how it evolved. But in any case, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do? First of all, for the people, since we do have so many people listening from other places, I did read it, but just to maybe reiterate to the audience, there is a disability rights organization in each state, is there not?
Yeah, that's right. Back in the 70s, Congress actually passed a law that required every state to designate one organization as what's now called a protection and advocacy system. And initially, those organizations were created to advocate for people with developmental disabilities. And then in 1986, it was extended to people with mental illness. And since then, there have just been more and more programs added to the PNA systems. And, you know, for purposes of your program, one of the protection and advocacy programs that each of these agencies has is protection and advocacy for individuals with traumatic brain injury. And so, just like you said, there is a protection and advocacy system in each state, and actually, there are some protection advocacy systems on Native American lands in the tribal areas, as well as some of the like Puerto Rico and some of the places outside of the continental United States.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So if somebody wanted to find theirs, and the way I found out, you know, wound up finding you, there is a federal website that I can give, but, you know, at the beginning, I Googled disability rights of and my state, and it can be as easy as that for the listeners out there, just disability rights of your state, and you may be fortunate enough to find someone like Brian when you get a hold of yours. But the Fed is involved in this. Each state has a disability rights office, and so tell me a little bit. When I originally called you, I was talking to you a little bit about cyberbullying, and boy, I want to have you tell, you did a little bit of homework too, and I'm going to have you tell the audience what you found out, and then based on what you said, boy, there's a lot of information about it, and it does appear to be, at least the federal information, appears to be directed mostly towards children. They do have protected classes of children, but it all seems to be about kids. And then I went on to find some other things, but it came out of the cyberbullying area and into the area you were telling me about called cyber harassment and cyber stalking. And it would appear to me as I read some of the things, the initial things on cyberbullying that did refer to kids, that if you took the word kid out and put in protected class or vulnerable group, that the verbiage would apply and the same principles should apply. I don't know whether the government looks at it that way or not. I know with the recent sweatshop wage, they did. You know, they did look at that and change the law. So I think, I don't know, you're the lawyer. Are they seem to be moving that direction?
Well, you know, I mean, as with anything in the law moves very, very slowly. So the internet obviously is a relatively new technology, but it's become extremely pervasive in nearly everybody's life. So because the law works very slowly and, you know, legislators want to be careful in what laws they pass, there haven't been that many laws specifically addressing sort of cyber victimization as just kind of a broad category of all of those. There have been, as a result of some news stories, legislation and in states and a little bit at the federal level dealing with cyberbullying, as you said, which is specifically aimed at juveniles in the school setting. But even there, it's not crystal clear as of yet what sort of the law is, and it's also not entirely clear when legislation in every state will be passed. So as of right now, there are some federal laws dealing with that may provide either a civil cause of action for someone who has experienced some form of cyber harassment or cyber stalking, as well as potential criminal liability. So there is like a federal statute dealing with stalking, and part of it is aimed at sort of it says interactive computer services. So it's aimed specifically at these newer sorts of technology, but even so, it's just not very well developed as of yet.
Sure. One of the things, if you don't mind, and then I'm wondering, how you would respond to this. Would this be the kind of thing? Because, well, and maybe I'm going to frame the question another way, and then I might drop back. But one of the things in the introduction that I read is that now you're an attorney, and you represent people. Tell me about a typical day of what you do and who you represent about what. It sounds like there's a lot of diversity in your day's work, so no day's work is exactly the same, but in these protection and advocacy programs that you have, this network of them, what specific kinds of legal representation for people disabilities do you provide or help them with? Who would call
sure.
you and want help?
Well, let me preface this by saying that, generally speaking, most of these organizations are nonprofits with a board of directors that oftentimes sets the goals and objectives for the fiscal year. So whatever we might be doing in Nebraska may not be what the protection advocacy system in, say, New York is doing.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. But as far as Disability Rights Nebraska goes, really every day is different. Certainly there's a fair amount of client interaction. Just today, for example, I did a number of intakes where people called in with issues, and I tried to help them out or refer them to someone else who might be able to help if we weren't able to. So we have people with mental illnesses who are at, you know, state-run facilities. So here, for example, the Lincoln Regional Center is one of the places that we receive calls from and one of the places that we monitor for abuse and neglect. We get calls from parents about students, about their student, and how their student might potentially be discriminated against in school or not receive a free appropriate public education as is required by federal law. We have people with developmental disabilities who may call in. We, as an agency, promote self-determination and independence more broadly. So we advocate for the least restrictive sort of environment that a person can live in. So in Nebraska, as you're probably aware of, there were recently criminal charges filed against a woman who was the guardian for 600 and some odd people in our state. And that is obviously not one person can't handle 600 and some odd people and actually represent their best interests or, you know, do what might be best for that person. So we've been working on sort of trying to restructure the guardianship laws in Nebraska. So one of the things that we do is some public policy work where we work with lawmakers in developing laws that will be beneficial to people with disabilities. So we provide testimony on occasion at the legislature here. We write up reports about different things that are going on. And as far as sort of the legal side of things, a lot of the legal issues that we deal with, the lawsuits that we handle, have to do with people that are institutionalized. And a number of the cases that we currently have deal with people who have been neglected or abused by the provider. So at an assisted living facility or at a state-run facility, you know, this individual is paying to receive certain services, and they're not receiving those services, and in fact, you know, they have incurred some sort of injury as a result of it. So those are, broadly speaking, the sorts of things that we do. We also try to do some community outreach and some public education. This is especially true during voting season. One of our federal grants is for voting rights, so we do a bit of that as well.
Right. Let's go back for a minute. There was a couple of things you said, and they do have to do with some things that I've been reading about, but you were talking about the case in Nebraska about the custody. What does it take? How did a person, what does it take to become a custodian of somebody who has a disability that this woman would have been able to get that many people under her care? I guess I'm wondering what's wrong with the system. I mean, can you just go up like the Humane Society and pick out a handful of disabled people? And do you have to have any accountability, fill in any paperwork that says that you're doing this, caring for these people?
Yeah, I mean, in theory, there are supposed to be certain annual reports or quarterly reports that are filed that discuss the welfare of, and if the person is called a ward, but I'll refer to them not as a ward. So they're supposed to file these things. The big problem in Nebraska is that not many people want to act as a guardian. So Nebraska is the only state that doesn't have some form of public guardianship, like an office where a centralized office that can act in the best interests of a vulnerable person who might need a guardian. And so because of that, like, Nebraska has relied on family members to become the guardian for someone. And that, you know, the family members don't always want to be, you know, their sibling's guardian or you know, their son's guardian or whatever the case may be. And in those circumstances, there have been attorneys appointed as the guardian for someone, and you know, they could be a lawyer at a courthouse and not have any intention of becoming a guardian, but then the judge says, this person needs a guardian, so we're going to appoint you. So there have been a few different corporations created that act as the guardian for some of these vulnerable people. And so the sort of incident or the scenario that you and I have been talking about, this woman ran a corporation that was the guardian for all of these people, and the county court judges sort of had their hands tied because, you know, someone may very well need a guardian, and they don't have anyone to appoint. So that's where this sort of office of public guardianship comes into play and could certainly be beneficial. I mean, in the alternative, there are more limited forms of, like, decision-making or joint decision-making power. I mean, there are powers of attorney. There are limited guardianships where the individual still has certain legal rights that they would lose if a full guardianship were put in place. And so, you know, it's not... In theory, it's not supposed to be easy to become a guardian, but because of the difficulty in finding someone willing to be a guardian, the courts have at times, in Nebraska anyway, been a bit more lax with requiring things like a bond, which is something required by statute, or, you know, if the paperwork filed quarterly is slightly off, you know, they'll give that person some slack because it's been difficult to find someone willing to act as the guardian.
Now, and I know you may not be able to answer this because it's outside the purview of Nebraska, but in a bigger state, you used New York as one earlier. Do you think that states like that would have, well, maybe not the hole that we just talked about in Nebraska, but some kind of bond or screening process for someone, an individual, to become a guardian? Like, I've heard of cases on here where a person has just decided to be a guardian for a vulnerable adult, and that vulnerable adult, you know, may not be thinking clearly, doesn't feel that they can manage on their own, needs the help, and takes the person up on the offer with naivety, leap of faith, trust, and that doesn't turn out to be a very good idea. Does it have to wait until after the fact when something's happened for that person to be able to come and get help, or do you think some of the other larger states have got a better screening process in place? And I'm not talking about institutions, and I'll cover one of those about the Nebraska Regional Center in a couple of minutes, but individuals, I mean, if I decided, do people get paid for being guardians?
If they can, yeah, there are some sort of incentives for them to be guardians. And again, that's going to vary from state to state. In Nebraska, as far as the screening process goes, there is anybody petitioning to become the guardian of someone has to go through a sex offender registry check. They have to go through a criminal background check. They are supposed to go through a credit check because, you know, when you're the guardian of somebody and you have so much decision-making power, it would be rather easy to financially exploit that person. Anecdotally, I've heard that there are some states who have better models. I couldn't give you specifics on those.
Sure.
But if you know, in theory, if the state were more involved in some way, that would likely be a good thing, in part because the state can be held sort of a bit more accountable sometimes than an individual. And, you know, it can be all over the press, whereas there are lots and lots of individuals who are a guardian and there might be abusive things going on, but you don't frequently hear about it because they take place in small towns. And you know, to be frank, unfortunately, a lot of people just don't, they don't care about vulnerable people or they're not, it's not that they don't care, but they don't have any sort of vested interest.
Right.
So there's a big stigma that obviously needs to be addressed. And I think that is one of the keys to trying to develop better policies when dealing with these guardianship issues, is reducing and or ideally eliminating the stigma associated with, you know, some of these disabilities, well, any of these disabilities.
Right. Right. Well, I kind of wondered about that when you said it, because I remember a neighbor of mine across the street many years ago, when the family moved in, they had, I thought, wow, they got a lot of kids. And it was like old Mother Hubbard. It was a pretty small house and lots of children. And I'm not that observant all the time. I should be more, I'm a little more observant about my environment now, I think, but I noticed at a point that they weren't the same children. that lived there. You know, the kids were different kids. Even I noticed it from time to time. And sometimes there would be more and sometimes there would be less. And somebody introduced me to the concept of guardianship, and that people make money. They can make money for doing that. And I think that's what was going on with these people across the street. You know, they were taking in children under whatever the auspices was that they were doing that. And they, like I say, the kids were kind of coming and going. But these people, you know, had there been a check done on them, well, I know, you know, sometimes we have people who come in who are illegals, and maybe you've got five families living in one little tiny house. You know, we hear of those things happening, but, you know, this wasn't a case like that. It was a couple, and they just happened to have, you know, it was probably a three-bedroom house, and they probably had seven kids living there. And so, you know, I just kind of wondered about it, and in response to, like, the Nebraska Regional Center, I had a dear friend, and he had a brother who was in the Nebraska Regional Center. Apparently, the parents weren't able to handle the situation. The young man was developmentally disabled and had some behavioral issues, and for whatever their reasons, he wound up in the Nebraska Regional Center. But my friend Tom and his mom went every weekend, and it's a ways from Omaha out to Beatrice to visit Jeff, I think his name was. And they did this every weekend throughout my friendship with Tom, which was over a decade. Every single weekend went and visited him. And another unfortunate case. My friend Tom wound up having a cancerous tumor and died in his 40s. And then the mother was no longer, because she was elderly, able to get out to see Jeff at the regional center. And 3 weeks after Tom died, Jeff choked to death. And I don't know, you know, I just, I had to kind of wonder, felt so bad. The mother died shortly after that. She never expected to outlive two of her three sons, that's for sure. But it seemed like Jeff was doing a good job as long as the family was coming out every weekend and taking an interest and showing that there was a family member that cared and was keeping an eye on things. And 3 weeks after they can't come anymore, and I know that could be a coincidence, but, you know, a person can choke any day of the week, but I just thought it was kind of a weird irony that 3 weeks after the family, you know, couldn't come to check anymore. And I'm sure that they knew what the situation was at the regional center, that brother Tom had passed away and, you know, the elderly mother wasn't going to be able to make it out. And suddenly this person is dead too, 3 weeks later, which struck me as odd. So I guess I'm wondering, there must be some reasons that guardianship is a good idea. And like you said, there's been a lot of apathy. One of the things, somebody had a question here I want to try to catch before the chat room scrolls up. What happens when your family takes over as a power of attorney? Can that, when does it end?
Well, there are, you know, durable powers of attorney. And, you know, I mean, it can sort of vary. They can be drafted in different ways. You know, they can come into effect after something has happened. You know, it's similar to like an advance directive, or like a healthcare power of attorney, where if someone, you know, ends up in a critical condition, then the power of attorney might be able to make, you know, end-of-life decisions related to that. You know, in other circumstances, it could be, you know, handling the general affairs of someone, but it's not going to be as sort of, it's not as robust, I guess you could say, as a guardianship.
Right.
So
I suppose the power of attorney is going to, some of that, to me, reading the question, would be, it would kind of depend on the need. I mean, I suppose that he's asking, again, when does it end? I would imagine if the person's medical status didn't change, it probably wouldn't end until the power of attorney died or was no longer there. If the person's status or health changed, then can they apply? Let's say the parents don't want to necessarily give up the power of attorney, but let's say that the person has been rehabbed to the extent that they're aware and they feel like perhaps they've been working with an independent living center and had the proper therapies and they think that they can take care of themselves, then can they petition to have that power of attorney removed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the things associated with the power of attorney is limited to, you know, becoming incapacitated or something along those lines. Again, they can vary in the way that they're drafted and what sorts of powers are given to that person. Yeah, I mean, it can vary a bit.
Okay. Now, one of our hosts works in an independent living center, and I was wondering if you could distinguish a little bit for me. When I looked it up, and he actually sent me a link, he works in an independent living center, a big reputable one in South Carolina, and he sent me a link, and I looked up for Omaha independent living centers, and we have what's called the League of Human Dignity. It doesn't say independent living center in the title. It says League of Human Dignity. So I did call there, and I visited with a man a while back, and he said they're kind of acting, you know, I'm not sure what the League of Human Dignity was doing before or how those things connect, so maybe you can educate me, because again, you know, once people have gotten their bell rung, whatever state they are in, you know, this stuff, the legalese and all the departments and city, state, federal, that stuff isn't easy for somebody who's not in the vulnerable group to figure out. And so it's certainly, you know, not easy once someone has had a brain injury to figure that out. But apparently the League of Human Dignity, they are listed in the federal link that talks about independent living centers. And I'm assuming that they would have to know something about disability rights in the independent living center. So do you guys in your department, your state department, work with, and I don't know about the other cities in Nebraska, maybe you can enlighten me on that too, or at least there in Lincoln and maybe in Omaha. Do we have a lot of independent living centers where people can go and get information about who you contact for services that you might need or what services might be available to you if you have a disability, like maybe assistive technology or like this bullying issue, cyberbullying? When I originally talked to you, one of the examples I gave was a couple of predatory practices I noticed going on in brain injury chat rooms, and one of them was a pyramid and a particular person I knew getting, just every pyramid scheme in the world, this man can't say no, you know, and he's living on limited income and Social Security, and I know darn well my background is in sales, that this is at the very least an unethical persons that are coming into a group like this and selling, you know, taking advantage, I think, of people who maybe aren't as apt to say no or might be more susceptible to believing that there's one magic pill that's going to cure everything they've ever had or thought of having, including any malady that their pets might have, or that they really need to have a certain kind of freeze-dried food that has all of the natural vitamins and nutrients that will stay live on their shelf in the pantry for 150 years. Just that kind of predatory thing, whether it's sales or a pickup, you know, using it as a dating service, a place to go pick up people to take advantage of them for money or for, there's some things I'm going to read to the audience later when you pointed me toward the cyber stalking and cyber harassment. There's some really interesting categories there, and I've witnessed a lot of that going on in online chat rooms. So, in any case, trying to read what's in the chat room if I've got questions coming there as well. But in any case, so those are the types of things that you deal with. Tell me about the independent living centers. Do you communicate with independent living centers here in Nebraska? It seems to me logically like there would be a tie between disability rights service like yours and the kind of information that an independent living center would hand out.
Yeah, I mean, what we're able to do is relatively limited in the grand scheme of things. And so we get lots and lots of people that call us with an issue that we're not able to address. So under those circumstances, we try to provide them with the best information and referral services that we can. So we may, you know, we may communicate directly with another organization or direct that person to contact a particular organization, depending on what problem they may be having or, you know, what assistance they're looking for. As far as receiving certain services go, in Nebraska anyway, theoretically, a person is supposed to be able to contact, there's this thing called Access Nebraska, and it's been a little bit of a mess, but Access Nebraska is supposed to be your sort of one-stop shop for various services. So, you know, if you're interested in applying for developmental disability services for your kid, or if you are looking to apply for, you know, any variety of services, perhaps some sort of Medicaid waiver for something, then that's supposed to be where you go. In reality, that obviously isn't always that helpful. So, you know, some place like the League of Human Dignity can be helpful. There is a vocational rehabilitation organization in Nebraska, and I imagine there are in a number of different states. So, you know, someone who may have experienced a traumatic brain injury and who is looking to get back into work might be able to contact vocational rehabilitation and get back into the workforce, or learn some new job skills so that they can work back into living a more independent life.
Okay, great. So we do have a few of those. And one of the things I didn't know in the beginning, unless our host who works at the Independent Living Center informed me, you know, to me it's kind of a misleading name, Independent Living Centers. You know, to the untrained eye or the person who doesn't know, sounds like it's a place to live, you know, that people will be able to live there more independently, when really what it is like you say, like this access, a place to one-stop shop where you can find out ways to be able to live on your own more independently and take people out of group home environments and places like the regional center. So when you were talking earlier about the apathy in the community, in the country, maybe, you know, the people that are involved in this, and as a matter of fact, the founder of Brain Injury Radio has just been on the courthouse stairs in Washington State doing a little of that politicking, and we're hoping to be able to get, you know, the brain injury community, regardless of the source. I think one of the things that's held up, you know, held up some of the progress has been that the brain injury community itself has been so splintered and divided. You know, you've got your TBIs and your acquired brain injuries and your brain tumors and a lot of different origins for brain injury. And I think what we're trying to do here at Brain Injury Radio, and in addition, my observation being a host here for a year and a half, is that regardless of the origin of the brain injury, a lot of what we deal with in residuals and issues are the same. And so, you know, we're trying to do a little of what you're trying to do, which is educate the public and promote advocacy, but also try to bring together the brain injury community to be one louder voice that can change that societal attitude that you're talking about, instead of a lot of splintered groups.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a strong believer in making one's voice heard. So, you know, anybody can have an impact on, you know, legislation. There are bills with hearings that are held all the time, and, you know, some of them would affect the, you know, the brain injury community. And so sometimes sharing one story at these hearings can be very powerful. You know, similarly, calling state legislator or, you know, a congressperson for that matter, can be very, very helpful, I guess.
So one voice might be able to make a difference?
Yes, but if there is a concerted effort, if there are shared goals, it's much easier, because if you have, you know, a number of different people sending the same message to the legislature, then it's much more difficult for the politicians to ignore what's going on. And so,
right. So we want to have that collective group of voices going. That was one of the reasons why I was a little disappointed when I came. As I said, I didn't have any exposure to the community at all until I got here. And one of the things that's really shocked and disappointed me is the dissension among the ranks within the brain injury community. And while some appear to think that's a good idea, to me it's extremely divisive and running a knife right up through the middle of the group, which with one voice can be heard. And it seems like a forest you know, missing the forest for the trees kind of situation, and getting stuck on the small picture and not really having a full grasp of the big picture. You know, for that you need unity, and that's one of the reasons why quite a few of the other disabilities actually have one color ribbon and 1 month that they recognize for their disease, and brains are all over. Heck, TBI has March, and brain aneurysm has September, and everybody's got a different color ribbon, and so I think there's been a problem in getting particularly the brain injury community together as one voice, and you know, off each other's throats and moving in one common direction. But if you don't mind, I have a question for you. And this is Les Paul Morgan. He's in South Carolina, and he's the one who works at the Independent Living Center. So, Les, this is Brian.
Pleased to meet you, Brian.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too.
I didn't hear the very first part of it because I was late getting in. I worked late tonight. We're actually... tomorrow is actually something called Love Shouldn't Hurt. Do you mind if I mention it? Because it ties in with this.
No, please.
Where I work at, the Center for Independent Living I work at is called Walton Options for Independent Living, and we're having something tomorrow that's called Love Shouldn't Hurt, a domestic violence prevention program, and it's its 10th anniversary. And I worked up until about 8 o'clock tonight at Walton Options, where I work as a person with a disability who was told he'd never work again. And the thing I love about independent living is it's a federal mandate. First of all, that's not the part I love, that it's just a federal mandate. But the mandate is that people with all disabilities are included under the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And, you know, you were talking about bullying and cyberbullying. I posted some links a while ago, and it's really bad online, cyberbullying and different things like that. I don't want to distract you from what your topic was, though. I kind of lost the topic when I started saying that. Kim, what were you saying last?
Well, you were just talking about your project that you're doing, and what Brian does. And we're going to go in. I'm going to let Brian go. I told him I wanted him to come over, you know, to come on for about an hour, just because I was happy to know that we have disability rights in Nebraska, and he's an attorney for Disability Rights of Nebraska. And so he helps with the 7 federally funded protection and advocacy programs, and he was talking a little bit about that, what kind of legal representation and other advocacy services that they provide for people with disabilities. And of course, this is a federal program, but there is one in each state, and I told people at the beginning that they should just at very least, you can Google Disability Rights South Carolina, Disability Rights Nebraska, and it will come up with this agency, and every state has one. And so we're going to go on when Brian goes and talk a little bit more about cyberbullying, cyber stalking, cyber harassment, and some of these things are federal and some of these things are state. Some of these things are local, but it gets to be really muddied water. In any case,
sure does.
We'll be discussing that more. But Brian was just telling us a little bit about what he did, and the question I posed to him was just about if, you know, about our network really here in Nebraska, and was asking him about independent living centers, because you've got me so well trained, and I thought, well, Disability Rights of Nebraska is going to be able to help disabled people know what their rights are. I'm taking it on a very literal basis, you know. But
well, the thing I love about being employed at a independent living center is we love to work with other agencies. Sometimes agencies, and I'm not saying your agency or any other agency, just sometimes agencies want to take it all to themselves and not share it. We love sharing. If you've got something that's good for us, that's fine. If we've got something that's good for you, it's fine. We just want to spread it out and spread the good word. There's hope and help for people with disabilities, of all disabilities, not just brain injury, but all disabilities. And I posted a link on there for ILRU.org. I'm trying to say it right. I've got a headache real bad, so I might be messing it up on the website right now. And he, if you click it, it'll open up all of them for your state. Right there, Kim?
Yes.
Okay. I put a link on there for your state.
Gotcha.
All the independent living centers.
Right, and that's the one.
Well, there were several.
Yes, yes. The League of Human Dignity was one of those. And that was the only one I saw in Nebraska. I was just looking.
There's more. Something closed my window, so I'm having to come back on. Something, I don't know what happened.
But in any case, did you have another question for Brian? Because I promised him that I would keep him about an hour just to tell us a little bit about it. I thought it was important that everybody know that that there is a disability rights office in their state. And we might ask about, should we ask him about the right to work, the waiver, work waiver?
Yes, that'd be a good one.
Ask him about that.
What is it about the right to work waiver that you know about? Do you know much about it there?
I unfortunately don't. There are other people in my office who are much better versed in that than me.
That's all right. It's just kind of off-the-cuff question. But that's what I love about right now in the news big time is that President Obama just signed an order, but something where people working in developmental disability sheltered workshops must be paid the same minimum wage as anybody else, where they had been paid as much as pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the latest things for people with disabilities. Finally, they're going to have to pay at least a minimum wage. And I know people that literally make $4 and $5 a week doing work. And so it'll be a wonderful thing to see people actually getting paid for the work they do. And I know some that work very hard.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's been some significant discriminatory behavior regarding wages with people with disabilities for some time now, and that's been okay under the law. So the fact that President Obama, and I presume this is an executive order.
It is, that's what I was trying to say. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that he signed this is certainly, it makes things a bit more hopeful, I guess, that things will change.
Yes. Well, thank you for coming on, and just keep on fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thank you. And, to all the listeners, if you do have legal issues or if you have issues regarding services, your local protection advocacy system should be able to help you or point you in the right direction.
And
great.
I'm fixing to post the link that has all the different ones throughout your state on there again in case you didn't see all of them. I'll post it right now. There you go.
Great. Well, Brian, I want to thank you very much for coming on tonight. Again, this is Brian Craig, staff attorney at Disability Rights of Nebraska in Lincoln, and I encourage you, I know our show goes out all over the world. One of the reasons I wanted to have Brian on tonight, one of the reasons I wanted to have Brian on tonight was just to let you know, I wanted to know what we have in Nebraska and exactly what the disability rights agencies do, and then let the listeners know that you all have one of these in your state. And so if you're encountering a disability whether you're new to this arena or have been around for a while and just didn't know what kind of help was available to you, then please Google disability rights and your state, and that'll be a good place to start, because I would imagine, Brian, if a person can't be helped out of your office would be able to refer people to independent living or any other types of places that they would need to be in touch with to deal with their particular issues.
Yep, that's certainly something we try to do.
Well, that was one of the reasons why I really wanted to have you on, because, again, this isn't getting addressed by doctors. You know, the doctors aren't helping. I asked a neurosurgeon, a bigger neurosurgeon in town, about some resources, and because they weren't specifically medical resources that, you know, like therapies that they have out of the hospital, he told me to check with the gal at the front desk, and I said, "You mean the one who books the appointments?" Really? That's what you want me to do? Well, of course, you know, the nice woman at the front desk booking the appointments and checking people in had no idea of what I was talking about. And so I thought, wow, there's no wonder people have such a hard time. You know, like I said, all the legalese and the different agencies, state, city, federal, you know, it's all tough for somebody who's got their complete wit about them. But, you know, once you've gotten your bell rung or you're recently into a disability situation, there's so much adapting that has to be done, and you need help doing that. People can't do that alone. And when the doctor can't help you and, you know, you and your family don't get an instruction book when you get released from the hospital, I've been saddened at the amount of people around the world that just don't know where to go or where to turn to get this kind of information. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on tonight, is just to familiarize people with another way. Les has done a good job of letting people know about the independent living centers, but I also wanted people to know about the disability rights agencies in their state. So, again, I want to thank you for coming on, and we may have you back in the future and talk some more.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, you take care, and, gosh, there's so many people on the board. We'll be talking to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Les, I think we're going to separate for the audience out there. I'm going to take callers. We'll play a song, come back, and then go on to some issues about the difference between the definitions for what is cyberbullying, what is not cyberbullying. We'll talk about cyber harassment and cyber stalking. And we're going to be talking about these things in general from a federal post, and also one that was referred to me by the FBI that gives some general instruction. And it's one of the things that's come to my attention lately. In fact, Belinda is here tonight. I'm really happy that she's here. Remember, we met her the other night, Les, on over the week from Australia. Oh, Les must
what?
Have...
I'm sorry, I just walked back to the phone. I didn't hear what you said.
Well, Belinda, I said we're going to go on. I'm going to play a song, and then I'll come back, and
we'll
answer the questions on the board. But Belinda's here tonight, and we talked the other night about bullying with her, and I sent her a thing, and she's come back tonight, and I'm really glad about that. So, Belinda, hang tight. I'm going to have you on, and we're going to talk about some general distinctions about cyberbullying and what you can do if you feel you've been a victim of it, and who to contact. So I'm going
to
park you.
Thank you for. I just want to say thank you for doing this subject. It's something that needs to be done.
Well, thank you. I, like I said, I am the first one to say that when I entered this year and a half ago, Brain Injury Radio, I had gone 17 years without knowing much of anything, you know, knowing about any kind of resources. And it's been a real eye-opener the last year and a half from our callers and listeners and people who write notes from around the world on a lot of different topics. And so, you know, as a result of this show, I found the Brain Injury Association of Nebraska and had her on, and now found that we have a disability rights organization, and which is not to say that these things aren't flawed, but at least you know that they're there. It's a place to start, and you know where to take that voice that he was talking about, that collective voice. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that collective voice of unity and how we can make that matter. I thought a lot about what you said the other night about 2014 being the year to have the cages rattled and our voices heard in higher legislative levels. And I'm with you there, because like you said, if we can't do it at a time where two of the biggest special interest groups that there are, the veterans and the NFL, are shining the spotlight for us to step into, if we can't do it now, we're not going to be doing it. And so we can spend time being splintered groups at each other's throats, playing circus games, or we can pull it together and have the unity and power that comes in a collective of one voice of unity. So that's what I'd like to talk about when we come back. So everybody take a break for a couple of minutes. I'm going to play a song by Leah West. This is Speechless. 4 minutes to powder your nose or get a drink, and then we'll come back and I'll start opening the mics after I read you a couple of definitions that might clarify. And I'm going to park you for just a minute less, and I will bring you back. Thanks. And this is Leah West with Speechless.
Sometimes life only gives you one chance, and I don't wanna screw this down.
Speechless with Leah West. So, now I'm going to read you some things. When I talked to Brian earlier, before the show, a few days ago, we were talking about cyberbullying, and he said that it really breaks down to a few different categories: cyber victimization. Cyberbullying is traditionally associated with juveniles in school. Cyber harassment, which is a single incident aimed at an individual who is a member of a protected class, that would be as in disabled, people with a disability, and cyber stalking aimed at an individual taking place over an extended period of time. And one or more than one of these categories can apply. But I found, did a little homework and found some things that were interesting that I will read to you. And then I'll take some of your calls. When identifying cyber stalking in the field, and particularly when considering whether to report it to any kind of legal authority, the following features or combination of features can be considered to characterize a true stalking situation: malice, premeditation, repetition, distress, obsession, vendetta, no legitimate purpose, personally directed, disregarded warnings to stop, harassment, and threats. A number of key factors have been identified in cyber stalking. False accusations. Many cyber stalkers try to damage the reputation of their victim and turn other people against them. They post false information about them on websites. They may set up their own websites, blogs, or user pages for this purpose. They post allegations about the victim in news groups, chat rooms, or other sites that allow public contributions, such as Wikipedia or Amazon.com. Attempts to gather information about the victim. Cyberstalkers may approach their victim's friends, families, and work colleagues to obtain their personal information. They may advertise for information on the internet or hire a private detective. Monitoring their target's online activities and attempting to trace their IP address in an effort to gather more information about their victims. Encouraging others to harass the victim. Many cyber stalkers try to involve third parties in the harassment. They may claim the victim has harmed the stalker or his or her family in some way, or may post the victim's name and telephone number in order to encourage others to join the pursuit. False victimization. The cyber stalker will claim that the victim is harassing him or her. Bohe, who wrote this article, writes that this phenomena has been noted in a number of well-known cases. Attacks on data and equipment. They may try to damage the victim's computer by sending viruses. Ordering goods and services. They order items or subscribe to magazines in the victim's name. They often involve subscriptions to pornography or other sexually related items. Arranging to meet. Young people face a particularly high risk of having cyber stalkers try to set up meetings between them. And stalking is a form of mental assault in which the perpetrator repeatedly, unwantedly, and disruptively breaks into the life world of the victim with whom he has no relationship or no longer has, with motives that are directly or indirectly traceable to the affected sphere. Moreover, the separated acts that make up the intrusion cannot by themselves cause the mental abuse, but do, taken together, cause a cumulative effect. And there's several places that you can report incidences of these types of things. Well, here, let me read you one last thing. Cyberstalking is, I'll go back to the very basic. Cyberstalking is the use of the internet or other electronic means to stalk or harass an individual, a group of individuals, or an organization. It may include the making of false accusations or statements of fact, as in defamation, monitoring, making threats, identity theft, damage to data or equipment, the solicitation of minors for sex, or gathering information that may be used to harass. The definition of harassment must meet the criteria that a reasonable person in possession of the same information would regard it as sufficient to cause another reasonable person distress. Cyberstalking is different from spatial or offline stalking in that it occurs through the use of electronic communication technology such as the internet, and sometimes leads to both. Now, there's a couple of different places that this can be reported, and I'm going to give you a website in a minute, a couple of different websites that will tell you about the different, each state has laws that specifically address electronic forms of stalking, harassment, or cyberbullying. And I will give you that website in just a minute. But the other one that you might want to check out, there's a pretty easy one that gives you some basics called stopbullying.gov. And I will put that in, www.stopbullying.com. And that is primarily, like Brian and I were talking about, targeted toward children, the way the government approaches that. But these things also apply to protected classes of vulnerable individuals or groups, which include people with disabilities and or brain injuries. And there's two places that they recommend filing complaints, and one of those is through the ADA. And Les Paul knows a little about that. I'm going to put that site in, www.ada.gov/filing_complaint. Just getting that in the chat room for you. And this document will explain how to go about it, but I can also give you another one that they give, and that is ada.complaint@usdoj.gov, and that is the Department of Defense. And they're taking these things more and more seriously these days, because there have been a number of different cases, and I'm going to open up some of your lines here now, but there have been a number of different cases where people have been led to commit suicide. And, you know, we've talked about that a little bit before in the context of just a change going on in our life when there's a brain injury, and that place where we get stuck between the old me and coming to accept the new me, that can be a very lonely place in between, and we lose a lot of people in that place. Now, you take the stress of having a brain injury and dealing with the residuals of the brain injury, a lot of different residuals that we've talked about on here, full basket syndrome, sensory overload, emotion regulation problems, short-term memory problems, and those things that impact how we view ourselves, how we view the world, and how, sorry, I can't read the chat and talk at the same time. Anyway, and then you add something like bullying on top of all of those other things. And those things alone have been enough to make people go out and self-medicate to the point where they get arrested, put in a mental hospital with the key thrown away, or have committed suicide. And so one of the things that I'm very concerned about, I look at Brain Injury Radio as a peer support place. And to me, when you're talking about peer-to-peer support, one of the paramount things that is important is safety. If a person doesn't feel safe or supported in a support environment, then that isn't very supportive, is it? And I would have to tell people to run as fast as they could in the other direction. So what I'd like to see is support that is supportive, where we raise each other up and not tear each other apart. And so I do have a couple of callers, and I'm going to let Belinda on. She didn't know the protocol for my show, that I usually have the guest first, and then we do open mics for the back part of the show. But hi, Belinda, is this you?
Yeah, how are you?
Hello, it's so good to have you back again.
Ah, yeah, you can't get rid of me. I'm yeah.
So you were telling us about bullying the other night. I was talking about, you were talking about childhood bullying, and I thought we would start there and then work our way up to bullying doesn't always have to do with kids. Oftentimes the people who bullied as children grow up to be the bullies in adulthood. And so why don't we start, you had mentioned and started talking a little bit the other night, and then the show was about to end, so I'm so glad you came back tonight and why I wanted to let you on first. For those that don't know, Belinda is from Australia, and so we were very happy to have her come in the other night, and we had a good time talking about, you know, you haven't gotten hit by a falling koala bear or anything since we talked last, have you?
No, thank God. No.
Well, okay, I wanted a little levity there, but on a more serious note, tell me a little bit about the bullying that you experienced. And, well, a little, folks should know that you have cerebral palsy, so you did have a disability to contend with from the time that you were very young. And so the bullying started at a very young age. And we can probably guess, you know, any kid that's different is going to be a target for bullying. You can tell us a little bit about the experiences that you had, but I think once you've said a couple of them, like you mentioned the other night, people are going to get the idea. But what I'd like to know more about is how that made you feel as a child and how you think that might have shaped your level of trust and your adulthood, and if you've had any of the bullying now that you're an adult. Is that something that you've always had to contend with, or just something that was in childhood, and how did it affect your childhood, and what tools did you use to cope with it?
It's also now as well, even as an adult, people know I'm different, as you say, and as a child, it made me feel like a piece of rubbish or less than that on someone's shoe. It was so bad that even the teachers, as I said, were making the kids go for it and make me late for class, and then I'd get detention, and they'd be laughing behind the scenes, and they thought it was quite funny. And then of course I went home black and blue because I didn't have good balance in the first place. My mum was sick and tired of me coming home, like, as I said, black and blue. And she got the teacher fired, which I thought was quite hilarious.
Yeah.
I was only
just anyway.
At the time, and I was like, oh, good on your mum. And then she moved me to another school, and it was bad there as well. And,
oh, wow.
And then she moved me to a private school, and oh boy, it got worse in middle school, I tell you. The principal's son didn't like me for some reason. I don't know why, but he didn't. And anyway, we were in like what's like a playroom for the older students, like with a pool table and CD player and everything. And he thought it would be quite funny to open my blouse with a pool cue, so he did. Yeah, that was embarrassing. And I told his dad, who was the principal, and he did nothing, absolutely nothing. He got no punishment whatsoever. There was another time I vaguely remember being picked up by the boys and thrown from one end of the classroom to literally outside. So I flew from like the back all the way to outside.
Wow.
And yeah, and nothing got done there either. And then another time during lunch, I think it was, somebody outright called me a slut. So I retaliated and slapped them once. My hand hurt for 2 days. But he deserved it.
Yeah.
But,
wow.
Yeah, it's even now. There was an incident last year. My husband almost got stabbed by this person who was living here, so I rang the police and everything, and he got arrested. And not on that though, only on having illegal knives. But yeah,
wow.
He got arrested, and he got back to wherever he was taken, I don't know where, none of my business. he wrote a Facebook status and lied and said that my husband was beating me and everything, and everybody, he made it as public so everybody saw it, so everybody made a comment. And this got emailed to me, and so I did the right thing. I went to the doctor and everything, and I was stressed out because everyone, including the child protection people, saw it. So I had to go to my doctor, have me looked at and have it documented that there's no abuse. But even now, he's spreading things over the internet about me and my husband, that apparently we abused his sister's mother-in-law in the shopping centre, which was not true. Like, It's ridiculous. So he has a lot of American friends, which is, I think, ridiculous. They email me or message me on Facebook saying how bad I am and everything. And yeah. So it's still going on even now. So.
Wow. Well, let me take a couple of the callers here. I had a theory that talking about bullying might bring some out, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Area code 404, you're on the line.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good. How are you doing, John?
I'm pretty good. I've been getting bullied. I was diagnosed with Asperger's. I don't know
yes.
if you know what that is, but
yes.
Yeah. Asperger syndrome.
In school, people make fun of me because of some of the things that I do, and this one person decided to threaten me on the internet, and I was just wondering what I should do about it.
Well, if they threatened you on the internet, and one of the things that you should always do is keep, if you don't know how to screen a copy, then take a screenshot, then you should cut and paste and collect all of the paperwork you can on these attacks that you've had, and then contact the FBI, or depending on the nature of your complaint, the ADA, Americans with Disabilities Act, has a department that takes complaints for cyber harassment. And I had given that the Department of Justice, branch of the federal government. I do have a phone number for them, but their website is ada.complaint@usdoj.gov, and your local FBI is, if you have a local FBI office or contacting the FBI, Cyber Crimes Division is another option.
Well, I want to know why the person, why people think it's funny to insult and threaten people with Asperger's, you know?
Because
I don't understand why
that.
It's funny.
Well, it isn't funny at all, and the reason it's funny to them, in fact, this thing that I was reading you earlier is kind of interesting. It says that the people who do it are often people that don't have a life. They have too much time on their hands. They're jealous, they're envious, or they're just mean-spirited about things and people that are different than they are, or than what they perceive to be the status quo. So they're people with a lack of empathy and understanding, and they have a mean streak, and they deserve to be taken down on the carpet, because no, there isn't anything fun about it. It's very hurtful.
Can I say something about I was just going to
say
that's usually a person that has a very low self-esteem of themselves, and they think so lowly of themselves that they get their jollies by making someone else feel as bad as they do. It's usually a person that is either very lonely inside, that projects themselves like they're tough, or they're some really cool guy or something, or girl, and they're really so lonely and sad inside that they take out the loneliness on you. I've known people like that. I've had people make fun of me when I was in school. Like, Morgan, you're nobody. You're nothing. You're a freak. And I'm saying, what'd I do to you? You breathed on me? I said, that's nice. You breathed on me, too. Well, there's like gold on you. I said, well, get out of my face. I don't know you. People can be mean for no reason other than they're so messed up themselves that they don't even know how to react to you, and they try to make you feel bad like you've done something. So, I'm proud to meet you, by the way.
You see, I think I might have instigated it because I didn't know at the time that the girl I asked out to the dance for school was his girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, being an Aspie, I mean, it's, things get awkward for me when I ask females out, because I kind of just say that I know it's weird, but I kind of say that I'm sexually attracted to them, and I would like to ask them to go out with me to a dance.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kind of weirded the girl out, and she told her boyfriend, and then he just started threatening me.
Well, if the threats are real, and even if he's just doing it thinking he's being a jerk, you should turn him into the, is it in school or where?
Yeah,
bullying is
a
serious thing. Like I was talking about, love shouldn't hurt. I know people have been shot and killed, and people who are permanently disabled because someone took it to the next level and tried to kill someone. They were so jealous or so angry or so enraged by their wife or their husband that they wanted to take their life. Well, I'm not saying that would happen, but I'm just saying, you never know what someone will do. I mean, my dear friend, I never dreamed that she would be a quadriplegic as a result of this kind of thing.
Yeah. But do you think that contacting the FBI or the DOJ would help my situation? Because I don't know if they actually deal with bullying.
I think you should talk to a guidance counselor at your school or something.
Yeah.
I do too, John. I think that is a really good question. Now, I did put in, I'm not sure if you're in the chat, but all 50 state, well, and in your case, it's not cyberbullying. So, John, I think that you need to talk to the school about that. Certainly, you're in a local situation talking to the local police. I talked to the local law enforcement here, and they have a cyberbullying division related to their bullying division. So whether it's in person, in school, or on the internet, you can contact your local police. It sounds like in your case, the people that you're asking to the dance, that's all kind of going around school. And so that is right. I talked to people at school about it, but if you're continuing to get threatened and you just asked one time about this girl going to the dance and then you found out she had a boyfriend, that's an honest mistake. And if you backed off at that point, left it alone, and this person continues to harass you, I would call your local police department and ask for the bullying crimes division and talk to them about making a report. And so thank you for your call. Area code 954, who do we have on the line?
Hello, my name is Joseph.
Hi, Joseph.
Yes. Hi, I just had a problem recently. At 17, I dropped out of school to play video games. And because, like, I was being bullied at school because I was a brony, right? So, basically what happened was a brony, like, a male that likes My Little Pony. So, I dropped out, right? Like, around, like, 11-ish grade, somewhere around there. Like, I dropped out at 17, right? So, I just been living with my parents, and I played this game called League of Legends with my ex-girlfriend, and I kind of messed up really bad. I told like she played a character called Beastin, and I told her not to play that character, and she played it, so I leaked her nudes to all her Facebook Facebook friends and stuff and family.
So you did that?
Yes, because she played Leeson, and I told her not to.
And so you were the bully.
Well,
you realize
the
that does make you
like,
the bully
we both
at that
did
time?
Something wrong.
Sorry?
Sometimes. Like, I don't know. I think we both did something wrong. She played Leeson. I actually got banned from League of Legends because of this incident, and because I was being abusive online, but I wasn't. And now I really don't know what to do because, like, I got no money. Like, I got no way to make money because before I would just make money by elo boosting, which is just like making accounts and then selling them. Then I get them really high ranked in League of Legends. Now I don't have a job or anything because it got banned, like IT banned. And and I don't have a relationship anymore. And,
right.
And I got kicked out of my parents' house.
Whoa. Well, now, see, you're a good example of the consequences of what can happen. You know, when you told the person what to do, we can't make anybody do anything. God created us all with free choice. So if that person wanted to... And I'm not familiar with the game. I'm just talking in general. But, you know, I think of old board games when I was a kid. And, you know, if I wanted to play Monopoly and I wanted the race car and somebody told me, don't take the race car, you have to take the doggy, and I didn't feel like it, that's my prerogative and my choice to be able to do that. And so if you were in a position after that where you started posting things that were derogatory about that person, then there would be consequences. And I'm glad that you called
in. I think it was necessary because, like, women don't have, like they can't make real choices. So, I have to make it for them because I know best.
You know what you ought to do? You ought to go volunteer at a Center for Independent Living or work with somebody with disabilities. You'll get a better time out of your life than you ever imagined learning how to help other people, and you wind up helping yourself. I'm being serious right now. There's somebody out there desperately in need of someone young that's willing to help them instead of, you know, you're talking about bullying. Why not turn it around? I always say turn every negative into a positive. Turn your negatives into your positive. You're young. You have a long life ahead of you, I hope. And wouldn't it be great if you were helping change the world for the millions of people with disabilities all around the country right now and around the world? That would be a beautiful thing there. And you could look back at your life, at your legacy that you leave, saying, wow, I didn't know there were people that can't even get out of their own home. I didn't know there were people that are geniuses that just happen to have cerebral palsy. I didn't know there was somebody that broke their back living in my own neighborhood that used to be a motocross racer, that kind of thing.
You do have to realize up front, though, when you're trying to control someone, that's inappropriate. And I'm really glad that he called in. He's not here now. I'm glad that he called in because the important point in his story is that there's consequences. And he listed a lot of consequences. He lost his relationship. He lost his home. He lost his ability to ever go on the Internet, which impacts his ability to be able to earn a living. And so those are the kind of consequences that happen when people break those laws. And controlling other people is a form of abuse. And, you know, you were just talking about the program that you're doing, Love Shouldn't Hurt. And control is a part of that.
A major issue.
Yep, control is a major issue, and that was a very good example of control. And then punishment, public humiliation for not being able, you know, for someone not allowing themselves to be controlled. And so thank you for calling in and letting us know what those consequences can be when you find the right place. Apparently the girl found the right place to report that episode. So let's try Linked Stargate. Did you have a question or comment on bullying?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about cyberbullying and how it's affected my life. Like 2 years ago, my brother committed suicide because of, he was being cyberbullied, and the last thing he said was...
You know, I thought it would be interesting, you know, like I said, if we had bullying on as a show topic, that we would get bullies that would come out
tonight.
Yeah,
we did. It's funny, but it's okay with me because the
stuff that I'm reading, everything that I'm reading here says, you know, that, that there are consequences and that the people who have nothing better to do don't have a life worth living that's fulfilling where they're doing the kind of things you were talking about, just going out to help others. They get their yucks off of trying to control and
Isn't it a shame there are some people out there that want to live the phony life and pretend they're living a real
life. Yeah,
there is. In fact, if you and Les, Belinda, want to talk for just a couple of seconds, I got a couple of calls to screen. If you do want to call in and get on the show tonight, I don't take anonymous calls. So I'm going to screen these calls before I put them on the air Belinda, talk again a little bit. Again, Belinda's from Australia.
The land down under.
Down under. And are your
don't forget the damn drop beds, you know?
That's right. No bear dropping. No dropping
floor
bears.
That's funny how you told us that.
How easy was it for you, I guess, and then maybe you and Les Paul can talk about this, if it even came to this, but when you talked, you know, about the more recent episode in adulthood and with your husband, how responsive was it your local police that you called or
First, he threatened to stab my husband in our own home, and then he wrote what he wrote on the internet. Right, the police wouldn't do a thing about it, now he's in America, which is ridiculous. I wish he'd get kicked out. Yeah, he's not a very nice young man, and somehow he got into America, which is ridiculous. But
we live in an amazingly strange world, and my dream is to see where we turn it right side up instead of upside down. It seems like justice tends to go in the opposite direction. The people who haven't done anything are often taken advantage of by people who are saying they haven't done anything when they're criminals. There are domestic violence laws to protect people, but we need to put more teeth in them, and we need the police to be trained better. That's one thing we're going to have at our Love Shouldn't Hurt tomorrow, is we're going to have the police officers talking about domestic violence, and we're going to have people from a place called the Cumbie Center, which is a domestic violence and abuse center, speaking about it. And Craig set it up, and we're hoping it'll work out right. We're going to actually open up a separate account for Brain Injury Radio to try to broadcast it live around the world. I hope it works, because we've been really busy. I didn't leave work until after 8 o'clock. I normally leave at 5. So it should be on tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I actually saw my mother being held up by her throat by her husband. And I saw my mother, and she also had a blood nose, and I was only 6. So I walked over, I kicked her husband in the groin and said, "Piss off." And I told my counselor, and he looked at me and he goes, "Good on ya." So I know what can happen, what can lead up to it. Sometimes it can be nothing. This guy was so bad that if my mum fell pregnant, he'd say, "Get an abortion or I'm fixing the brakes on the car."
Wow. Mm.
That's how bad he was.
Well, my own father was a controlling man. He had very bad control issues with my mother. I talked about since this is the night before we do Love Shouldn't Hurt, I'm a son of a domestic violence abuse father. My father was a very abusive, abrasive man. And yet so many people knew him and loved him, they couldn't believe that we would ever say that he was really mean and slapping and kicking and hurting and threatening to kill me and threatening to harm my mother and my brothers. It was just over and over. He's the pillar of the community. We love Mr. Morgan. And he did have a serious mental illness. One minute he'd be fine and nice, and then 2 hours later his eyes were big and he's threatening us. So it was partially...
That's ridiculous. Were you, a child?
I was a child, yes. I hated to come home around my father when I was a kid.
Oh.
But I was so worried. I mean, my mother, she really became my mother and my father. She really did. Because my father was so abusive. She and I grew a lot closer, I always wanted to know what it's like to have a father that will go on a fishing or camping trip with you. He wouldn't do that. He'd say, "Stupid idiot, get away from me. You're full of the devil." Things like that, just out of the blue. And I said, "Dad, why'd you say that? You want me to slap you down?" I'm saying, "What?" I'd go in my bedroom and just sit. Because my mother would be
gone. What my mom used to say was, if you're a young boy, right, one day that young boy may be 6 foot tall and be able to look at the father and go, try and hit me now, you son of a, because you won't get far.
Yes.
Right. Okay, you guys, hang on just 1 second. I got a couple other callers we will try. And the phone number here is 424-243-9540. If you have anything you'd like to share about bullying, cyber harassment, whether you're the perpetrator or the victim of it, if you have something you'd like to share, again, you can call in to 424-243-9540. Make sure you press 1. So that I know you have a question or comment, or you can call in on the toll-free number 866-200-4449. I want to take this opportunity at the top of the hour to thank the Recovery Now sponsor, Lash Publishing. Be sure to check them out at lapublishing.com. You will see on the left side that it says Brain Injury Journey. And if you click on that, it will take you to the subscription page for their magazine. And everything that Lash Publishing publishes has to do with brain injury, whether it's for the survivor, the caregiver, medical professionals, veterans. They've got quite an extensive library, but they do have this magazine, Brain Injury Journey, that was debuted last April. And you can pay a subscription fee to have the hard copy sent to your home, or you can scroll down just a little bit, and it says click here for free subscription. And it's exactly like the magazine, but it's the online version, the free online version. Again, that's called Brain Injury Journey. And their latest edition just came out. It's got some wonderful articles in it. And you can also access their back editions. So be sure to check out Lash Publishing. Also want to thank TBI Survivor Network for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio. We appreciate that and the opportunity to be a forum of peer support for other survivors of brain injury and caregivers, neuroprofessionals, and other interested parties. Thought I'd also bring up next week, my guest is going to be Mark Siebel. He is a writer, Wake Up Jeff, and a second book that he is about to come out with. And the week after that, a very exciting guest, Mikel Vega, going to be on. And he is a former Navy SEAL, two times bronze medal recipient, and also is in movies now, and he's going to talk about ways other than pharmaceuticals that help us heal. So a couple good shows coming up the next couple of Wednesdays. Got a lot of 111 callers, but we had John on a little bit ago, and he had another question. John, you're back on the line. What question did you have?
The guy that I was telling you about earlier, the dude that I asked his girlfriend out, okay?
And right.
I don't think I was really truthful in all of it, because I think I have this problem. I was asking his girlfriend out, but I had my hand in my pants because it's a comfort zone for me, and I kind of pulled my penis out when I asked her out because I was really nervous, and I don't know what to do about it.
Well, that is something I'd seek counseling for. That's the kind of thing that can get a person arrested. I know that there are some issues with impulsivity with brain injury and those sorts of traumas, but there's also laws against indecent exposure and what another person might perceive as threatening behavior. So, you know, that I'm glad that you were completely honest, because completely sincerely, you definitely want to seek some help to help you regulate that kind of impulsivity and that kind of behavior, or you may find yourself in jail or getting hurt badly by somebody's boyfriend or husband. So thanks for calling, John, and thanks for being honest about that, and I would definitely seek some help if I were you. Arthur. Let's see. Arthur, you're on the line. Arthur, was that not your real name, or? Guess not. Okay. Arthur was a 111, so apparently he didn't really want to talk. Arthur?
Hello.
Is this you?
No, this is Alex.
Alex, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, Arthur is gone. Alex is on. Alex, you're on the air.
Hello. I want to talk about bullying in the workplace, specifically, like, from your boss, right? Like, okay, let me tell you my story, right? I work at a IT company, like a server-based company. Like, we work on Sears and stuff. Some websites, you know. And I manage servers, right? And basically what happened was my boss always makes fun of me because I'm a brony. He always calls me into his office. He's like, "Oh, hey, brony, you know, like Pinkie Pie and stuff like that, and I can't quit because I wouldn't have a job, right? So, you know what a brony is, right?
Don't think so.
Brony is somebody that is a male and likes My Little Pony. And you can also be a clopper, somebody who gets off, like, sexually on My Little Pony.
Yeah.
Interesting. But not real.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know. So you bring up a topic like bullies, and the bullies come out. Isn't
yeah,
that
isn't
interesting?
It a, isn't it a crying
yeah,
shame
exactly.
that these fools... Wow.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. I think what we'll do is we've got an hour left in the show. I'm not going to pick up any of the anonymous calls, so if you do want to talk, you're going to have to let me know who you are. And there they all go. Goodbye. Okay. We had like five or six anonymous callers, so I guess they don't want to wait around to not get their line picked up.
I guess they'll come get
them next. Yeah. Yeah, too bad. I guess they don't know we've got a trace on the show either, so all of their IP addresses are getting picked up. So I'm glad to have a show like Bullies tonight to kind of smoke some of them out. That's pretty cool.
Exactly. It is very good.
Yeah, it was the FBI agent that suggested that I do a show like that. So that's good. At least that one guest got to tell you guys what consequences come out of things like that.
Yeah.
So you have fun with that. The fines will be immense. We do have an area code here. We'll try one of those. Area code 561, you're on the line. Who do we have?
Hey, guys, this is Will from Palm Beach.
Will? Good.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, I like you guys' show so far, but the only problem I had was have you guys actually ever been bullied? Because you're, like, you're talking about it, but you've never been bullied, it seems. So it's like...
We all have.
Yes, we have.
Okay, well, try this out, you fucking nigger slut bitch. You fat cunt.
You're such a fool. You're so stupid talking that way. You're a child. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Doesn't even know how to speak English. Can't even speak. Poor guy.
No. No, it is a shame. And like you said, Les, all of the material is out there. People who feel the need to do that generally don't have a life that's productive with, you know, productive things to do. They've got low self-esteem. You know,
if they don't
think,
watch out, they have a life of prison ahead of them.
With a little luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a little luck, they do. Or there's always a bigger, badder bully around the corner, and I think that's some divine retribution that, you know, for every bully out there, there's one just a little bit bigger, and when you play in that playpen...
prison system. A lot of the men in prison, the really tough, hardened criminals, wound up there because they were abused when they were young. And if you go in the prison system and they find out that you're somebody new and you molested children, oh well. There's retribution in the prison system against those kind of people, believe it or not. I know this to be a fact. It's very bad, too. I mean, I've heard several stories in my life of people who, the worst thing ever happened to them was going to prison. And they were child molesters, and they harmed people, and they did all the bad. So they think going to jail is just a piece of cake, and they'll get out. Sadly, they're mistaken. I'm serious. You think about it, a lot of people have gone to prison because they had a broken family or a broken life. But also, I'm going to say something. We got to quit blaming everybody in our family for our own problems. My supervisor posted something on Facebook a while ago. I wish I knew where I was at. It was perfect for this show, and I forgot about it. And I walked out of the room, and I don't know if it's still on the screen, because it's, you know, America and the world are about finding a way to put blame on somebody else but ourselves for this kind of thing. Look at these fools that have called in tonight, and they are fools. I'll say it again. They can get mad at me and say something, but
some of them are even bigger fools than you think. Because now this would be considered cyberbullying, so I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to turn it in. But this fool has actually got their phone number 954. So
okay,
got that phone number. At least the other one, the other bullies were smart enough to come in anonymous. You were dumb enough to come in with your number. So, got that down.
Well, I just found the article I was talking about. Can I read it to you? It won't take more than a minute or maybe a minute and a half.
No, please do. Read slow.
Everything you do is based on the choices you make. You is us. It's not your parents. It's not your past relationships, your job, the economy, the weather, an argument, or your age that is to blame. You and you alone are responsible for every decision and choice you make, period. That's it. And a lot of these fools that have called in, it won't hurt anybody if I act like an absolute fool and an idiot and get my jollies off being silly and a moron. And I know a lot of them are kids and they think they're invincible. They can do anything wrong, but that says a lot about it. A lot of people blame everything on everybody else, our society, everything else. It's us, whoever we are. That everyone that's called in and acted like that tonight, they're to blame for society. It's not their parents. It's not their mom, their dad, their cousin, the neighbor down the street, or somebody who shot at them. It's themselves. That's all I want to say about that. It's just when I read that, it hit home.
Yes. Yes. And so I think that is great. Now the person who is talking is upset because they realized that I have their phone number. So if you want to know what you did, these shows are all archived and you can listen back to it and you'll see what I'll be passing on along with your phone number. Thank you for calling. Yeah, I know you called in about the game. I understand that. And you can visit with the police about that. Okay. Great. Well, we're going to take a quick break. I need to get a vanilla Coke. I really need to hit it. Been a tough night. So, Belinda, do you like to do a little chair dancing?
Me? No. It's I don't see in public.
Well, here, you try it out. This is John Cruise with By My Side.
But there's no one but the wind.
Yeah, that was John Cruise Blues with By My Side. Les Paul, I brought you back up. A question was posed to me, and, oh, you know what, Belinda, we can't play Nickelback on here because
I only play
independent musicians. You have to pay royalties on labeled artists, and so I love Nickelback too, but I can't play them. Les Paul, a question was posed to me that if a person has this kind of behavior, this impulsivity, like one of the callers was talking about his behavior, and the person whose phone number I got private messaged me, and I wonder about the sincerity, but I think it's a legitimate question for someone who might be out there listening who is serious and not worried that they left their phone number. And that is, if you know that you're doing behavior that has gotten you in trouble, like the near miss with somebody's boyfriend, and you know that you're prone to bad behavior or controlling behavior, his comment is that he really wanted to stop this behavior, but he didn't know how. And I suggested two things, and you might have something else, but one of the things I suggested, and even though that was a kid and it was all starting with a game, that controlling behavior is something that is a lot of times modeled from their parents. A lot of times it's in reaction to, like you said, broken homes or various things, but we all have to learn as individuals to take responsibility for ourselves and our actions and understand there's going to be consequences. So if there are people out there who really do recognize that they have problems with impulse control or controlling behavior, I suggested that a counselor is a very good place to start. There are places that have counseling that have a sliding scale if you don't have insurance. The domestic abuse program I went through a number of years ago was sponsored through the YWCA, and both they had one for men and for women there, a different class, and it was separated, but it dealt with domestic abuse, and really, even though he's not there yet, he is young, that pattern is getting established at a young age, and if you can go and get help at this point, it might save you the bigger, harder consequences later on. And I really think if you walked into a counselor at a domestic abuse or an anger management, because control is a form of anger, if you look up anger management treatment or counseling, domestic abuse treatment or counseling, and you go to speak to one of those counselors, if they can't help you, I guarantee they will have the means to be able to refer you to someone who can help you. And it's a smart person who understands when their behavior is out of control, and they understand that there'll be consequences for out-of-control behavior. And it's a smart person who gets help. Because if you try to just say, I know that my behavior is out of line and I won't do it again, it's kind of like the drinker. I can't tell you, how many alcoholics there are out there who the morning after, when they feel crappy and have a hangover and they've maybe gotten in a fight or an accident or something the night before, have said, I'll never do it again, and they swear off the drink, or they swear off the wife beating, or they swear off the bad behavior or the impulsivity, whatever it is that they've got going, they make the pledge and the oath to themselves that they'll swear off of it. And 9 times out of 10, that doesn't work. Because it's a mental disorder or a character defect, depending on how you want to categorize it, but it is something that is a socially unacceptable behavior that, if continued, most often escalates.
And you said one key word several times, behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And behavioral therapists teach behavioral modification, behavioral
yes.
therapies.
Thank
and,
you.
I mean, it works wonders. I know several people that have gone to wonderful doctors that I personally know here in my own area, and I keep saying I'm going to have them on, and it seems like it never happens. Dr. Hertz is one of them, and some of his other doctors. And he's got a very young team of doctors. They're all young for, you know, sometimes you'll see one that's even in their 60s in most places, but these look like 30 and 40-year-old doctors, and they're amazing. I see children coming in and out of the office. I was in there just yesterday talking with some of them, and I see parents bringing in their children for behavioral issues. Maybe they're on what's the medicine of choice for children that are overly energetic? I can't think of it right now. You hear it all the time. It was really big.
For ADD, Rett.
ADHD, that's it. Yeah, the one for that. And they try to work to get people off of it. And if someone is impulsive, like a lot of these callers really could be brain injury survivors. And the funny thing is you're possibly helping someone that may sound like they're a pervert or something. And they might be one, but it could be because they've had a brain injury and don't even know it. That has caused them
right.
to call in and just say, I'm going to do something really wild and outlandish and hear myself on the radio doing that. But sometimes it's an impulse that they can't control. And I've met with a lot of people in our support group, and the behavioral therapists I talk about often, they'll come to our support group meetings every couple of months, maybe every 3 months, and they'll sit in and listen, and sometimes I lead the group, and sometimes they'll lead the group, and sometimes we do it together. And these guys are amazing. They've helped change the direction that a person was heading. I have met young people, and middle-aged, especially a lot of young people, from their teens to their 30s, that were headed in the wrong direction. That when I saw them a year later, from the first time I met them, it's like, wow, is this the same person? There is hope for people like the ones we've heard tonight. They might say, I don't believe in that. There's nothing wrong with me. If you act like the way you're acting, it's not really funny. It's only laughing at yourself is all you're doing when mocking yourself when you act that way. Because every behavior we know is a learned behavior, even if it's locking the door too many times or a forgetfulness. We've trained ourselves as America to be helpless. As people
mm-hmm.
with disabilities, thinking that somebody else has to serve us when we can do it ourselves to the best of our ability. And I've learned so much by meeting this group of doctors I'm talking about. I didn't mean to talk so much about it, but behavioral therapy is a big thing. It really is. So behavior modification is really what it is, retraining you to readjust your neural pathways.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I've got one more caller I'll try taking. Hi, you're on the air. Who do we have?
Hello, this is Arthur. I called in earlier, but you hung up on me because I had a 111. But now I'm calling in through my Skype client, and I just want to talk about how high school promotes bullying.
Okay.
Arthur,
because
go ahead.
In high school, all the teenagers, they practically have no power in, like, their lives, right? So they get, like, power in this, like, social hierarchy they call high school. Now, I remember meeting this one teacher that told me that, the last thing she said was,
I don't wanna pee. There's nothing that crazy about me. I'm just taking a whiz.
So
mind your own biz. Why is everybody...
You're so predictable. These guys are so predictable.
Yeah, Arthur, I knew when he called before he was the same author. Yeah, the same author. But
it's
he
not
likes,
funny
at
all, but it, in a way it's funny because they show their lack of anything. The lowest common denominator is what I hear when I hear them.
I got one for Arthur, though. He likes that kind of music, rap music. Here.
Wake up, wake up, wake up, Omaha, Nebraska.
I'll see you a rap song and raise you a rap song. I like my rap song better. Of course I do. Now, let's see. What would be like for Belinda? Boy, there is nothing like Nickelback, but Nickelback, is there? We'll have to find, let's see here. Let me romp through. Again, if you're not a troll and you have something you'd like to talk about bullying or cyber harassment, 424-243-9540. And actually, before... yeah, show your humanity. I did put something in there earlier into the chat room, and it was a website that tells the laws in all 50 states that explicitly address electronic forms of stalking, harassment, or cyberbullying. And it was kind of a long website, but I typed that in. And what you can do is I can give you the short version, and then you can use their search engine and just type in cyber harassment. But www.ncsl.org. And then if you go to that website, and what you'll find there is the National Conference of State Legislatures, ncsl.org. And if you search, they have a search window there, put in state cyber stalking or cyber harassment laws. And it will give you an overview of cyberbullying and then give you the state laws that apply that you can look up in your state. And then it will tell you where you can report incidences of this. So that is one resource. And again, the ADA complaints. And I put that website in there earlier. It's ada.complaint@usdoj, which is the Department of Justice.gov. And that is about disability rights. So if you are in the brain injury or disability community, you're considered a vulnerable group. And so the ADA will take those complaints, and oftentimes they will refer you to maybe the FBI, maybe your local police, or the Department of Justice might handle it themselves if they feel that it's a criminal case. Because as the young man was saying, and he gave us some consequences that he got that were real life consequences, that's for sure. Just a minute here, usdoj.gov, trying to get this in the chat room. And but the other thing is that the consequences on this are, there are misdemeanors, there are felonies, and the felonies can be very large fines and or jail for cyber stalking and harassment. And again, that's just repeated harassment in to somebody through the internet that any reasonable person going through the same thing would find upsetting. So put Belinda back on for a minute. So, you know, the kind of things that they were talking about, and I heard some people talking the other day about a lot of private messages that they had been exchanging, private emails and private messages, and a party put it all over government, I mean, not over government, all over internet pages, open internet groups, and it was very hurtful information. Now, if any reasonable person would have found that hurtful, you know, if put Belinda back on, I'm not sure where the yep, that was her line. Okay, Belinda, I put you on pause for just a minute because there's some line noise coming through on your line. I'll give you a minute to maybe clear that up. It sounded like some crumpling paper. I might have unmuted you at a bad time. But in any case, anything, that's one way for you to think about it. If you feel like you might be a victim of cyberbullying, cyber harassment, cyber stalking, keep copies of all of the information. Hopefully that's got time and dates on it, and put it in a file folder so that you have enough evidence when you go. And one of the things they're going to judge this on is if any other reasonable person would find that upsetting, that evidence that you bring in. And I think the more social media is around, there's so many good things about social media and networking and so many good ways that it can be applied. But at the same time, you know, for everything that's good, there's always another side of the coin, you know. And, and the other side of the coin is that bullying is something that's been going on since the beginning of time in real life. But now there's an open forum for people to be doing it out on the internet. And I think, you know, one of the things that you were talking about, Les, is that, you know, a lot of things, you know, can be handled privately. Like if I have a problem at a business, let's say, you know, I'll generally go and talk to the manager at that business, and we'll have a conversation about it. I'm not inclined to go home and post all over Facebook and every social site that'll have me about it, because I got a life. I'm busy, you know. I got things to do. I'm going to go address it with the one person, you know, bring all my facts to the table and address it with the one person that can do something about it, you know, the manager, and not play games, you know, not play games. And it's so hurtful. Like I said, my concern early on in the show is that we lose a lot of people. And my veteran that is coming on in a couple of weeks, in fact, I want to tell you exactly, his name is Mikel Vega, and okay, veteran, served in the military over 22 years doing special ops, and I'm trying to think of the name of his.
Oh, wow.
Oh, this is really great guess. No Drug Solution for Vets is what he talks about, but his Vital Warrior, that's what he's called, Vital Warrior. And he'll be on in a couple of weeks, and again, he's a former Navy SEAL who has two Bronze Stars to his name for you know, his services in the military in Iraq. And I forgot why I brought him up, but in any case, it's going to be a very good guest. Sorry I lost it.
That's okay.
What I was talking about, but yeah, really, really good guy. And that's what I was going to just say, is that, you know, these shows, we talked earlier about common, you know, the common good for the brain injury community. Oh, that's what I was saying, is just that the internet has opened up another forum for some old bad behaviors that have been around since the beginning of time. You know, there was bullying since the beginning of time, and now that's moved over to the internet, and too many things have become public, you know, that belong in private. I had an example of a friend who her husband had a really good job, and they weren't thinking. They were a young couple just having fun, and the husband had too much to drink and wound up what they probably thought was a funny, what the wife probably thought was a funny picture, was a picture of him sitting on the toilet with his pants down around his ankles, looking like 1,000 miles of bad road. And his boss saw that picture on Facebook and didn't think it was funny. And he lost his job because the company didn't want to be represented by that kind of behavior. They weren't proud of having one of their employees. And, you know, and you can argue all day long and say what I do in my private life is my business. But, you know, in your private life, if you happen to have a criminal record, if you happen to get caught in a domestic abuse situation where the police are involved, if you happen to get a DUI, if you happen to take drugs, or, you know, you're an alcoholic, if you happen to beat your wife, those are all things you do in your private life. But those are things that your boss pays attention to. And people lose their job for it. And if they don't lose their job directly for it, then people understand, you know, bosses understand a bad egg when they see one. And don't kid yourself that they won't find a way to get rid of you, you know, if they think you're a detriment to their company. And so, you know, again, I think that's another good reason to bring up this topic, is simply that if you're prone to having impulse control problems, or drinking too much, or other issues that would make you behave in a way that you wouldn't on another day, if you played the tape all the way through in your mind, and it's not something you would do on another day, you got to understand that there's consequences for that kind of thing. And so, you know, while the internet can be a wonderful source of information, and social networking can be a great way to promote good things and do networking and help people, it can also, unfortunately, be a way to hurt people. And and we don't want that. That's why I brought up the Vital Warrior, is one of the things he talks about is all the people we lose. And we've talked before on here, not only losing people who've had brain injury because of the depression and the change, you know, getting stuck in that what I call the tweener stage between the old me and the new me, but people who have been bullied. There's a big case in 2010, and that's what brought most of the federal laws on the books, and that was about a young man who somebody found a way to do that remote access thing and turn on his computer in his room.
Okay.
Scary stuff. And the young man, and he was just a kid, he kissed a boy. And the person at school who was responsible for doing that had the computer savvy to be able to do that, aired it all over the internet, and the young man killed himself.
Goodness.
And that was the case. I can't think of the young man's name, but it's well publicized out there because federal laws on cyber harassment and cyber stalking came out in full force after this case. And it is.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just because somebody took control of his computer, obviously that is very heinous to do that. And so I don't keep my I've never kept my computer in any room where I would be in any in any compromised position. I also close my computer every night. And so that isn't a risk at my house. But in any case, it wasn't just that. It was the whole aspect of bullying came up then, and cyberbullying, cyber harassment, cyber stalking, and that's when the Fed finally took an interest and got involved, because this kid's mother, and it's just like what we're talking about here earlier about voices, you know, having one collective voice. One person might be able to make a change, but one person is easy to sweep under the rug and sweep out of the way. A whole collection of voices united together in strength and conviction can make a difference. And that's what happened with the cyberbullying laws. And even though, you know, the guy earlier, my guest Brian, said that, you know, it can be difficult to navigate the system, it's getting more and more common. The abuses are getting more and more common. And along with that are the complaints and the remedies. And, you know, if you're out there doing that kind of thing, you might get a free ride for a certain amount of time, and then there might be a day that there's consequences. So it's like anything else. If you wouldn't do it in person, don't hide on the internet and do it, because you're hiding in sight. You know, you're hiding in plain sight on the internet. They have ways of tracking IP addresses and doing lots of other things nowadays to find perpetrators of these crimes. And when the suicide rate got high enough because of this type of thing, the government started taking notice, and that's why there's laws on the books for it now. And somebody asked earlier in the chat room exactly what it was, and I'd, you know, suggest doing your homework out there and look up cyber harassment. And the other one, you know, you think cyberbullying, and again, the first thing you're going to do is go get to stopbullying.gov, and it pretty much addresses itself only to children in school. Now, you can read between the lines and substitute children with vulnerable groups, because the law does cover that. But if you actually need to have it say the words, then do look up not just cyberbullying, because that is more associated with juveniles in school, but there are a couple of forms of what they call, in a broad sense, cyber victimization. V-I-C-T-I-M-I-Z-A-T-I-O-N, cyber victimization. And under that, you'll find cyber stalking and cyber harassment. And so if you just Google those things, that's easy enough, cyber harassment, cyber stalking. You will find definitions of those things, and also places where you can report those things if you feel like you've been a victim. And I encourage you to do so, because we don't want to lose any more people to mean-spirited people. You know, we're a sensitive lot, and a lot of us have emotion regulation issues. The same people that are doing the bullying, the people they're hurting, or people who might just have been hurt enough in their life.
Yes. Can I make a quick statement? I know you're running out of time soon. I was
just
going to say,
you've
had a wonderful show, first of all, tonight. Thank you for presenting all the things on violence prevention and all the things you have talked about. And the Center for Disease Control here in the United States, and I don't know if you can get it, the information sent around the world, but they have free brochures and things you can have sent out. Like if, say, you want to teach a class on domestic violence or youth violence or whatever type of violence it is, they'll send you brochures and information and posters and billboards that, like, we have them all over our Walton Options office. So we have a picture that sits behind me, and sometimes it gives me a funny feeling because it's a man with his eyes bulging and his fist out, and it talks about domestic violence right away. We got that from the Center for Disease Control for free.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a lot of things to teach people. And so I would highly recommend going to the Center for Disease Control website and looking up bullying and all the different topics you mentioned on it, too, because you'll find there's free brochures and publications you can get on it.
Great. And Les did put that in the chat for those of you that aren't in there. That's cdc.gov/, and you can look up violence prevention. And maybe we'll leave it at that. cdc.gov/violence
yes,
prevention.
Big.
I'm sorry, Belinda?
I said, yeah, it is a bit big, isn't it? Yeah. The whole thing.
Sure is. Big topic to cover, but I wanted to bring that up tonight. Some things have come to my attention, and I just kind of been watching. And, you know, I would like to think that support pages and support groups, whether they're, you know, support pages online or support groups in person, that people would feel, you know, nobody would go to a support group if they didn't need support. You know, on its face, a support group is a place that should be supportive, which means it should be empathetic, understanding, and safe. And if you go to a support page on the internet or a support group and that's not what you find, run, don't walk away from that place, and look until you find a place where you're safe and supported, because that's what a support group is about. It's not a bully pulpit. It's a place where people genuinely care for each other and conduct themselves with dignity and respect. And
we're in a support group meeting right now. It's going around the world. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and, you know, even at that, there's still people that come in, you know, on a topic like that and want to demonstrate how it's done.
Kim.
And, you know, in some ways, I guess that's good, you know, good for the show ratings. There was lots of people here tonight. Unfortunately, some of them wanted to demonstrate the title of the show, but it just goes to show you how prevalent it is. You know, how prevalent it is. So if there's bullying going on around you that affects your life, report it. Let's stop it, or at least give it a bite in the keister big enough for people to remember why it ain't a good idea.
And I
Belinda,
like it that law enforcement is... I'm sorry.
No,
I like it that law enforcement has started policing the internet a lot more and tracking a lot of these people, so they'll get it in the end if they don't stop it.
Yeah, I do too. It's interesting. This week I've talked to the FBI, the Department of Defense, the local police department, and the state.
We lost you. Kim?
I think she's gone.
I don't know if her phone went out on her or what. Kim, can you hear us? She's only got a couple of minutes left, I believe. Well, Kim, if something happened to your phone or whatever. Well, she's had a wonderful show. And say your name. Is it Belinda?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, I keep forgetting your name. I'm bad on new names, but it's wonderful having somebody from all the way around the world in Australia. I'm terrible at accents, but it isn't amazing how we heard the different faces and voices of people that are good and sadly the ones that are confused about why they shouldn't do things like they did tonight. Yeah, she dropped off the board. I wonder what happened, huh?
Yeah.
I wonder if her battery went dead on her computer or the power failed or something. Well, anyway, we'll just keep going for a couple of minutes. It should be shutting down in just a couple of minutes. I'm not sure if it will or not because she's not there. But what's going on tomorrow at Walton Options where I work will be about what we're talking about. We're going to have professional advocates being there, and there's going to be an award given out to the Survivor of the Year. And so that's an opportunity to show someone who has fought back from the tyranny and injustice of people causing domestic violence and abuse and harming people, and they'll be receiving an award for doing things in the community that are wonderful. And I happen to know personally the person that's getting the award, and I can't say it over the radio because they might hear it. But we're at two. At let me see. I forget what time it starts. I think it's 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow, Eastern Time, United States. So I don't know what time that is there. You'd probably be in bed. I have no idea what time that is where you are. We'll be trying to broadcast
lightly,
it.
Lightly. Lately, I wake up at 5 a.m. and it's like, what the hell?
Well, I'm so glad you found us because we need somebody from down under.
Well, actually, Matt, he sent me the link, so.
Okay. Well, I'm glad he did. Yeah. Oh, Matt did it? Okay. I have to.